is the Ali Le Rouge podcast on the Blood Red Channel, bringing you the view from the terraces at Liverpool FC.
Welcome to another episode of Ali Le Rouge. Joining me today at Accrington Stanley's manager, John Coleman, and making their debuts, Liverpool season ticket holder, Paul Taylor, and lifelong Everton fan, Jimmy Clark, who's going to give his unbiased reaction to the controversial derby match. So, the match took place last Saturday. Let's say it wasn't a classic, was it? But maybe that was because it was our 12 kickoff, or maybe that was because Sean Dyche was pretending he was a Burnley manager still. John, what do you think?
I think the half 12 kickoff it's in their heads now. And, you know, it's good for me, really, because I get to watch it before our game. So, you know, it's really good for me. I like them, but I always fear for them. Even going back to the start of last season, you know.
100% record this season?
Yes, I know. I've gathered that, yeah. But it's still early days, isn't it? So I don't think we play our best. I think the derby games are strange, aren't they? They always have been, they always will be.
Yeah.
I don't think you can play your true game in it. It's got the record for the most sending-offs in any fixture, which is quite understandable. And a lot will get made about the sending-offs. I thought Ashley Young, for his experience, should be wise enough to know not to throw himself in again for the second one.
Yeah.
I think Konate should have been sent off.
Yeah.
Because he's one of them players that, you know, once he got booted, I think it would have been wise to take him off.
Yeah.
But I don't think anything would have changed the results. I think Liverpool would have found a way. I think Liverpool would have found a way to win the game without playing particularly well. That's Liverpool's ilk of recent years. Yeah. And in games like that, they generally do find a way.
Paul, it was a pretty low-key game, wasn't it? In many respects for the derby. You know, we used to...
Flatter in some respects, I think.
Very flat, yeah. But, I mean, is that down to the half-12 or is it just down to the fact that it's... You know, Liverpool thinking, you know, it's Everton just going to park the bus. You know, what do you think?
I'd like not to think it was the latter piece. I think I tend to agree with John. We've got a bit of a phobia about 12:30 kickoff sometimes, even though we are doing quite well with it. I just think it found it difficult to get into the game. But Everton,
the crowd was flat, wasn't it?
The crowd was flat, and I think I thought Everton took advantage of it to a certain extent. I thought they played reasonably well. I thought Everton, to be fair, you know. But I thought I agree with John. I thought Liverpool were always going to. Always going to win it. But 12:30 kickoffs, I don't like them. John, you do, because
we're 100% this year, but cast your mind back to the first half against Wolves.
Oh, yeah. Woeful.
Absolutely dreadful. So, you know, results can mask things, can't they?
Mm. So, Jimmy, you know, as an Evertonian, how did you view the game? I mean, this is a totally unbiased view now, because I know you're a very unbiased person, aren't you?
Yeah, I'd take a slightly different view of it, really. Be honest with you, it makes me sad to hear a gang of Liverpoolians being sympathetic towards Everton, the 12:30 kick-off, and the crowd was a bit flat. I think the reality is it's flat because, to be honest with you, Liverpool expected, and I expected Liverpool to win. You know, and we haven't yet got a personality in the team. Everton, and you haven't developed yet a style of play, a personality, whatever way you want to call it. That kind of says that's where our threat's going to come from. It's bitty. And against a team like Liverpool, I don't think they've really got into top gear yet.
Mm.
But if you look at the statistics of Everton, even before Sean Dyche came along, we don't keep the ball. And against a team that does keep the ball, and usually has an attack when they've got the ball. You know, they only, you know, kind of like lose it very occasionally in the middle of the back four. Then you do fear a little bit. So I think a lot of Evertonians, why we all hope, because that's what Evertonians are made of, hope, that something will go wrong, that one of the, you know, the goalie will have a bad game or someone will have a bad game. I don't think you can generate enough. I think a lot of the time you're saying now apprehensive. You know, if Liverpool score an early goal, what's going to happen here?
Yeah.
So I took a slightly.
Calvert-Lewin had a great chance, didn't he, in the first few?
The
years.
Only chance, yeah. You know, the only chance.
He should have made more of it, I think.
Well, maybe too early
in the game. I don't know.
Yeah. I know we're jumping to the Toulouse game, but when you see some of the chances that were missed last night, I don't think a little header from like 8-10 yards out can be blamed. I mean, there were some absolute blatant misses in the Toulouse game yesterday.
But when he's on top form, that's one of his assets, I think. I really do think it's one of his assets. Anyway, that could have made a difference, but it was a poor
So I expected to be beaten. I was in Dundalk with a friend of mine watching the game on telly. And I said before, Anders said 2-0 to Liverpool. Yeah. Didn't surprise me. There were some things in the game that I'm sure we're going to talk about, could have twists and turns. But at the end of the day, I thought Everton were Everton and Liverpool were probably a little bit below par. And I know I'd like to have a bit of fire in my belly and turn around and say we was robbed. But we weren't robbed. Liverpool, I don't know what the statistics were for possession.
You watched it in Dundalk, was that in a pub, was it?
Yeah.
And what was it, mainly Liverpool fans in there? Or?
There was a few Evertonians. Yeah. I think there was probably about 100 people in the pub. Obviously, there were other people who weren't interested in the game. But I'd say the group of people who were surrounding the pub, were about 20. I'd say it was probably about 15 Liverpool fans, 5 Everton fans. And the lad I was with went over to Dundalk with, he was a big mad red anyway. So we were having this kind of banter anyway, backwards and
forwards. Ironically, you're not far short of the split in the city, are you? It's 2-1, isn't it?
Now you're getting really good.
Good ratio, that, actually. 1-3. It's 1-2, actually, in the city. The truce didn't last long.
I was just going to say, you see Jimmy's
Well, it's quite interesting, because the rule of two, you know, mathematics are cruel, aren't they? You know what I mean? But the rule of two, I always think Liverpool are going to win by 2 clear goals. I've got 4 kids, 3 reds and 1 blue, and we got beat again 2-0. And so I think it's pretty, like, you know.
Do you think Ashley Young going off, do you think that changed the game, or do you think that was just, you know...
Well, of course it changed the game, you know what I mean? You're down to 10 men against one of the best teams in Europe, you know, and a best and mediocre Everton team. Of course it's going to change the game.
Yeah,
I think in some way it might have galvanised Everton defensively. You know, Liverpool have got this propensity to amble through games they think that they're comfortable in.
Yeah.
And sometimes it bites them. And it was one of them games I always expected Liverpool to win no matter what happens in the game. I think even if Everton has equalised, I think, you know, Liverpool has gone up, stepped it up another gear.
Yeah.
But as soon as he's just stepped it up another gear and won, get the game done, rather than, you know, you're hanging on a 1-0, really. And then you're taking a striker off and putting the defender on.
Yeah.
You're playing against 10 men. And the best one in the world, Everton's confidence is sky high.
Well, when Everton started having a little bit of goal, that's when we had the breakaway, wasn't it?
That's right. You know,
I think that was one of the positives.
Transition's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, the Ashley Young definitely changed about the shadow of a doubt, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. And he was a fool. I thought he should have been, as you said.
He could have gone off earlier, couldn't he? Because of his sense, you know, couldn't he?
Yeah, and I think he's been a good signer for Everton this year as well. To a large extent, for his experience, he's. But I thought once he went, I felt a lot more confident we're gonna walk away with it personally.
Jimmy, do you think Craig Pawson bottled it by not sending the Canate off?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I don't think it would have changed much, because I think 10 against 10 anyway, I think Liverpool have got better players. That's just the reality of it, in my view anyway. So no, it didn't. And I think the standard of refereeing anyway has gradually declined. I mean, you know, the Tottenham game was only a few weeks before.
Yeah.
I think, you know, whether, you know, maybe the Reds won't like this or not, but there's always a tendency to kind of like make it better, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I would agree with that until I seen the week after when we had the most Stonewall sending off. You know, when our player gets yanked back, I was at the referees meeting with Howard Webb at the start of the season, or the league managers meeting with Howard Webb, and he showed us videos of players not playing the ball and giving a penalty away. If it's a goal scoring opportunity, will be an automatic red. The double jeopardy doesn't apply to that. Well, that's how
Van Dijk went, wasn't it?
So that was far worse than Van Dijk's, and yet, you know, we went to VAR and they didn't deem it was enough to send him to the monitor. It absolutely ludicrous.
Which game was that, sorry?
It was the Brighton game. Okay.
Yeah. But you're always going to get some, you know, inconsistencies between referee. But I mean, the Tottenham game...
But you shouldn't get it on the telly, should you?
Well, the Tottenham game was on a completely different level, wasn't it? A complete, you know, disorganisation. Yeah. You know, it was a complete nonsensical stuff. So I think you're always going to get one referee saying yay, one referee saying nay.
No, I would agree with that entirely. But then when they get given a set of parameters, and the parameter was, ask yourself these two questions. Was the player in a position to have a strike on goal or to score a goal? If it's yes, did the player who fouled him play the ball? If it's no, you have to be sent off.
Yeah.
Well, it met both parameters, so you had to go.
Yeah.
So there was no excuse for that. No excuse at all.
Rouge on the Blood Red Channel.
Whether it's the legendary Lionesses, grassroots or expert analysis of the women's leagues, Women's Football News has it all covered. A brand new monthly magazine packed with news, interviews and expert opinion. Don't miss Women's Football News. Pick up a copy today from participating retailers. Women's football is here to stay, and so are we.
I'm not disagreeing with it. I'm not disagreeing with your view on it. What I'm saying is that there's a difference, I think, in terms of when something's gone wrong. Even during a match, don't you? And most supporters would turn around and say, if the referee's made a real rick, you know what I mean, dropped a rick and what have you, he'll compensate in some way, shape, or
form.
You know, and I think that was what happened in the Derby match. I don't think it would have changed, it, unfortunately, the results.
You were thinking he had Tottenham in his head?
I think every referee who's refereeing Liverpool now must have that, because you can't just not know what you know.
But what I'm saying to you is, if that was the case the week before and the week after the Tottenham game, they had the most blatant sending off not given against them. So it can't be in the Reds, can it? Because if it was in the Reds, they'd have automatically sent them off.
Maybe they're still processing.
Well, possibly. But the harsh reality is, Canate shouldn't have made the second foul, and he should have been sent off.
It's a
second yellow. Yeah. In the nature of how he was refereeing the game, it was a second yellow.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he bottled it. I'm just saying it was a bad decision. Because he had to send him off.
Yeah. We're saying, Peter, I think that the VAR has actually made it referees worse.
We've
always had a go with referees. That's been part and parcel of it. But I don't know whether the
skills... Who line on it too much?
It's just making notice about the decisions.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, because if you look at the handball that we got the penalty from, you know, his arm was so far, and Paul, he didn't give it, did he? He didn't give it, because he must be thinking, I'll wait to...
Precisely, that's it.
You know, he never gave it, did he? He gave the corner, didn't he?
They're actually not refereeing the game, in that respect.
I think referees have lost the ability to deal with ambiguity and grey.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like leaning too much on VAR rather than their own.
We had a vote when I was at, the league managers had a vote about 8 years ago, 9 years ago. And I'm not saying that this was a definitive vote, but they were garnering our opinion on whether to bring VAR in. And I raised the point. I said, it's all well and good them getting the decisions right, and most of the people in the room were in favour of it. And I said, it's all well and good getting the decisions right, and everyone's craving that. I said, but what you've got to realise is, if you look at the game from a fan's perspective, I said, you won't have that 5 seconds of jubilation when you score a goal.
Yeah.
And that's what you go to a match for.
That's the release, isn't it? Yeah.
That rush. Yeah. You can't have that anymore.
Have it twice.
Yeah.
When the VAR decision comes in.
Or you might have it when you concede and then it gets disallowed. But it's ridiculous. So when I go to Anfield, I never ever stand up when we score. When I watch it on the TV, I never celebrate. Because I'm always thinking,
what's happened 5 minutes ago? Was that yet?
I might get choked off.
Some of the
ones Liverpool have had disallowed.
The other thing about VAR, I think, I don't see that it does not improve the quality of play on the pitch. The old back pass rule, when that changed, I think it did. I think it did. This is, for me, superfluous. It's just goal line technology all day long, not a problem. VAR, I'd scrap it tomorrow.
Be careful what we wish for. We put so much pressure on referees making consider poor decisions.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't allow the human elements of it. Now I'm really, really concerned about the way judgments are being made.
Yeah.
Because now we're watching freeze frames here. Football's a dynamic game.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Now, even when you watch it on the television, where there's in the Everton penalty, you know, the arm being hung out there, and you look at it, you go, penalty every single day.
Yeah.
The ball, his hand didn't move towards the ball. And I don't know why he had that body shape. I mean, I don't know, he looked like he was watching
the basketball.
Like he was catching a bus to speak or something.
Yeah, it was.
Ridiculous.
In this day and age, penalty all day long.
But the reality is, he didn't go like that, did he?
It's not to the handball.
But it's interesting what you say, because you start questioning the motives of the decision.
Yeah.
Because if you go back to the Everton Man City game, which could have, unfortunately it didn't relegate Everton, but it could have easily relegated Everton. And it won Manchester City the title, the non-penalty.
Yeah.
The question was, did it hit him on the T-shirt? That's the new thing. It did. Clearly hit him on the arm.
Yeah.
The VAR could clearly see where it hit him. That was the only question. Had it hit him on the arm?
Yeah.
It had. and no penalty was given. And then you're talking about a decision that could cost the club $300-400 million.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one Man City at the time.
Yeah.
But in that particular incident, the only person in the ground and on the pitch who thought it wasn't a penalty was the referee.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
No, on the pitch, but the VAR.
Yeah.
You know, the VAR. So then you're wondering, you know, if you go right back to the initial Tottenham one and the non-sending off of Harry Kane and the non-penalty on Jota, they just defy belief. Yeah. They defy any logic. And that's why I thought it lost all credibility that day.
Mm-hmm.
When you get two decisions, both against the same team.
Yeah.
It lost all credibility.
Mm.
But I don't think we're training the referees up in the right way. It was really interesting. I was watching the Mason.
You know,
the spat they had on Sky Sports when Mason, after the Tottenham Tottenham game, and the spat they had with the referee and what have you. And the referee was saying he couldn't stop the game, it's against the law. But what about the spirit of the game?
What about
fairness?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I would have thought if the referee had to turn around and go, listen, I'm going to go on the tannoy and say, listen, folks, made up drop the ball. People would have booed him.
The spirit of the game would have been upheld. That's actually wrong because how many times have you seen a team kick off and there's been another player in the half, so they say, no, kick off again.
Yeah.
So you can do it.
Of course you can.
I mean, there's nothing what's going to happen. The stand's going to fall down or something. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
But I was watching the rugby union finals, you know, recently, and you see the when they do the reviews of the situation, the conversations that they're having are all structured, dead easy, and done. And the referee's going, so I'm confirming X, etc., etc., and bang, that's it. There isn't any confusion at all about what's going on. So I don't know how you apply that in the football side.
FIFA don't want that, do they? That's why it's not. At the moment, it's FIFA who are objecting to that.
On what grounds, Peter?
I'm not too sure, but they just don't want to bring it in, you know, but it might change, obviously. But I mean, in terms of, I think, you know, obviously we agree that the refereeing standards have gone down, but in terms of the quality of the derby match, Diaz was tearing them apart, wasn't he? Not only Ashley Young, but when Patterson come on, you know, he had a good game, Diaz, didn't he?
He did.
I didn't think Liverpool played that well.
I'm surprised.
He had 78% possession, and at one stage in the second half, it was 94-6. You know,
you're going to get that with 10 though,
aren't you? If you look at the statistics over the last 3 years, with Everton and Tins, it's like holding onto the ball. They very, very rarely win, and this is against the poorer teams. They very, very rarely win the possession game. I think every now and again they'll play a poor team and they'll have that. But my concern has been Everton for a number of years now can't keep the darn ball.
Yeah.
Because can't keep the darn ball. You know what I mean? The goalkeeper throws out to one of the full backs. Full backs knocks it into the midfield. And almost inevitably there's one more pass before we lose the darn thing.
Yeah.
You're never going to win any kind of football match if that's the way. You can't keep the darn ball. And it's not because of tactics, it's because we haven't got good enough players.
Yeah.
And
whose fault's that then, Jimmy? I mean,
is that Tyson again?
Well, I mean, I think there's a broader conversation about the way the club has ran. You know, and God rest his soul, Bill Kenwright has just passed away and what have you. And he was top of the tree for a while, and he brought in Mashiri. But there's something wrong. I mean, you don't need to be a genius to know that there's something wrong at the club, whether it's about leadership, direction, whatever. The one thing about, I think we need someone, and I know they're as rare as hen's teeth, but we need a Shankly, we need a Klopp. Yeah. Someone who can grab onto the club and really pull the club and say, the most important thing in this football club is the darn football team.
Allez les Rouges on the Blood Red Channel.
I agree with you there, but it's very, very difficult now because money dictates everything now. And, you know, I mean, Everton are a miles bigger club than Aston Villa and always will be in my eyes.
Yeah.
But I hear Everton fans complain when Villa beat them and beat them heavily. But if you look at the money Villa spending, and I know people say, well, Everton have spent X amount over the last 7 or 8 years, but what are they spending now? Mm-hmm. They're not spending any more than 20 million on a player. And it sounds ridiculous, but you're getting nothing for 20 million. So you've got to go into the 50 and 60 millions before you bite sign players who make a difference to your team. Then, so they've got the problem is, one, they can't afford to spend it, because they're already fouled the fair play rules. Two, they've got to then give them wages,
yeah.
which they can't afford. And three, the players don't want to come.
Mm.
Now,
no.
I encountered them same problems at a really lower level. But I haven't got the money to get to... Last year, I didn't have the money to attract players into League One.
Yeah.
I certainly couldn't pay the wages. And they didn't want to come to us. They wanted to go to a more glamorous team.
Yeah.
So...
You can be more glamorous than Accrington Stanley.
But that's the problem that you've got. So that's the problem that everyone will face.
Yeah, yeah.
Until they get a super investment or a, you know, a mega investment.
Do you think the ground will change the fortune?
But you're not going to sign for the team just because it's got a nice new ground. History tells you that every team who moves to a new ground goes through a period of strife.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that
Arsenal did it, yeah.
Everyone's going to... Yeah. So... It's very, very difficult for Everton at the moment, and I feel sorry for them because I generally do, and really because how do you get out of this? It's all about money now, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. And you know, if you can't sign the best players, then you're expecting your manager to work miracles. And I'm telling you now, yeah, you can tweak them a little bit, and you can improve them. You can make players better. You'll get the odds one off.
Of course, yeah.
And that will book the tent. But in the main, you finish where your budget dictates you to. That's why Liverpool have booked the tent for a few years by winning titles, by winning European Cups, when they were the fourth highest spenders. And the fact is, it's
that's because of the genius of Klopp, isn't it? And by the way, John, is that a Clive Thomas T-shirt you've got on the?
No, you're getting judged on not a level playing field.
Well, we might as well all just pack in then, mightn't we? You know what I mean?
No,
we might
I'm
just
saying that.
I'm not saying that.
But where should Everton be in the pecking order now? Seriously. No, forget the fact that they're globally they're a massive club and they've got great history. Where should they be in the pecking order? And the pecking order, they should be where they are, fourth or fifth from bottom. Because that's what they're paying.
I believe in international Evertonianism, you see. And I think, you know, when you're talking about kind of like the global elite and what have you, someone's decided that Everton are not going to be successful. The global elite have decided that Everton are going to be crap.
Well, when he initially spent the money, he didn't make good signings. So that's down to the head of recruitment and the person who employed the head of recruitment and to a certain extent the manager. So when they had the money to spend, which was going back 4 or 5, maybe 6 years ago.
Spent it badly.
They didn't spend it well. So that was bad. And that's where all their problems have started now. Because you end up having an ageing playing squad who are on far too much money. And you're going into a situation now where everyone's throwing money at it.
Yeah.
And you're getting left behind. And unfortunately now in the Premier League, money will dictate it. And that's why Man City and Newcastle is the latter ones to the party.
Yeah.
And Chelsea, they will never finish out the top six.
And Everton are much bigger club than Newcastle.
They are, of course they are.
But it's strange as well, though, because that young lad there, left back there, the Ukrainian lad, he had a good game against Salah, I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought that Everton would have taken advantage of that. And is that down to the manager, making sure that they do take advantage of the end opportunities that they do get? Didn't seem to
I think
take
it was
it
a case of Dice setting up to it. Being hard to beat, and he nearly did it, didn't he? You know what I mean? We were getting frustrated
for
the penalty,
really,
you know.
Of course, I mean, that's the only game in town for Everton at the moment in time. I mean, when you look at the start of the season, we've already lost at home to three of the four of the teams will be around us at the end of the season. Yeah. At home, we've lost to them. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, that's a
worry. And that means that when at the end of the back end of the season, when we're playing these teams and probably fighting for our lives, we're already up against it. You know, so what Sean Dyche is doing, which is Dyche is doing, is absolutely quite right. We've got to be a tight unit. We've got to get our foot in. We've got to like try and bully teams. But at the moment, I don't think he's got the personnel to actually play that. You know, that really, closing down, hard to beat. So he's in a hybrid situation of going. We've got some players who can play, and some, but we haven't got that, as I say. But you call a personality or style of play. Everton haven't got that yet.
Well, they haven't got a team who can open up. I went to the Arsenal game and it's the most disappointed I've been watching Everton for a long time.
Mm.
And the fans were being a little bit anxious. But if you haven't got the players to open up, You've got to try and do the best with what you've got, and he's doing the best with what he's got, I think, in my opinion.
I would say, I think he's the best man for the job.
Yeah.
Because he's already done it with Burnley. I would settle for Burnley Mark II.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At this stage, at this time.
The School of Science would settle for Burnley Mark
II. At this moment in time, I would settle for Burnley Mark II. You know what I mean? And I know that might upset some of my Everton colleagues and what have you.
The purists.
But the reality, purists. Because we're a long, long way. The School of Science, 68, 69, 70, yeah, fantastic. You know, I remember watching myself when I was a lad. And football, that, you know, you could only dream of in terms of possession and power and pace and all those kind of things. But that team faded. Obviously, we had the mid-80s when we were back into our pomp again. But that team, again, you know, was put together, starting off by real good players, putting the foot in, winning the battle. You know, Shankly used to always turn around and say, didn't he, you've got to win the physical battle before your skill. And at the moment, we haven't got enough to do that first bit before, and we haven't got the players to do the second bit.
Yeah.
Jesus, Jimmy, I'm surprised I'm not even having told.
Yeah. But it's just the realism of it. You know, I mean, I've spent enough time going to Derby matches thinking, oh, if only, or we might, or we might, or we might. But for the last 4 or 5 years, Liverpool have... I mean, the head and shoulders by some considerable, above Everton. And there's no use trying to pretend. What we've got to draw Liverpool into is a battle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you've got to have the players to win the battle.
Yeah.
And at this moment in time,
obviously, with
the
way the Premier League is now, it's very hard to do that, isn't it? Because, you know, people are going to be getting sent off all the time. Aren't they? You know,
I mean, Liverpool's game is based on pressing. Yeah. And I think that's what you're talking about now, aren't you? You're talking about kicking the opposition. You're talking about making it difficult for them to play. So you've got to have the legs, and you've got to have the people who are going to put the foot in. And that might ruffle the feathers. Now, Everton did it for, what, half an hour, 40 minutes?
Yeah. And then the
sending off happened. Whether they would have been able to maintain that for 90 minutes? Because we all know, don't we, that it's such a powerful game now. That being able to run around chasing the ball for 90 minutes when you're only getting 24% of the possession is a really difficult ask.
There's some stats here. Liverpool had 26 shots compared to Everton 6. And Liverpool 6 on target compared to Everton's 1. So that's a reflection
of
the game.
And that 1 was in the first minute.
Yeah. And that's probably a reflection of the game, isn't it? But let's move on now to the Toulouse game. Because before the game, there was a pretty good tribute to Bill Kenwright. Before the match, and they played He Ain't Heavy, the Justice Collective version from Christmas 2012, because he originally played that after the Hillsborough Independent Panel Report came out, and he played it, I think it was against Newcastle on Monday night, and they played it on at Goodison, and he played the Hollies version of He Ain't Heavy. So that inspired us to re-record He Ain't Heavy, and you know, it's that type of thing that, you know, the human of Bill Kenwright. I mean, I know he took a lot of stick in the final years and that, but that's inevitable. David Moores took a lot of stick because he sold to the Americans, you know. And in a way, it's the last of those type of owners, isn't it? The David Moores and the Bill Kenwrights, because nation states are taking over clubs.
Yeah.
Allez les Rouges on the Blood Red Channel.
I don't, anyone, unless you're being really cynical and being, you know, part of the toxic, you know, kind of like part of the Everton supporters club, you know what I mean, in terms of like the disappointment being turned into a certain amount of toxicity, both on the ground and outside, is that the man was an Evertonian the way through. He was a decent man. You know, I know there's all these stories about, oh yeah, he made money and all this kind of stuff. I honestly don't believe it. You know, I do believe the fact that he mortgaged his house to be able to buy the club. You know, and everyone who talks about him, and I know, you know, no one talks ill of the dead, but even before he went, people were talking about nice things. I think he was an honourable man. I met him a couple of times. I had a nice conversation with him. He was courteous. Yeah. He was polite.
Yeah.
And we need more people like that, to be honest with you, in the game, because the spirit of the game is governed by people who genuinely believe that football is the best game in the world.
But he was of a different age, though, wasn't he? Yeah,
and another person who passed away was Bobby Charlton. I think we've got to mention him because he's off the same ilk, isn't he, really? Yeah. Even though, I know he did go into management, so it wasn't, you know, a very big success, but everyone who came across him thought he was, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think he's an Evertonian. I quite admire the way Jurgen Klopp kind of carries himself. I think Jürgen Klopp, Sean Dyche and what have you, they believe in the game, the way the game should be played, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they believe in whatever you want to call, you know, the heart of football is an honourable heart. Yeah. You know, best game in the world, played properly and what have you, and played fairly. That's just why we get, you know, I got upset with Liverpool in the Tottenham game as a staunch Evertonian, because I felt that the heart of the game was being ruined by really, really poor decisions and unfairness and injustice.
Yeah.
And the one thing about football, you know, when you play it, you know, when years ago when we put two coats down and what have you, was even then people would like stop the game, wouldn't they? If they thought, yeah, you know what I mean, and say, no, hold on a second, that
over the point.
You're refereeing yourself, you know what I mean? So you wouldn't be a fan of Mourinho
then, would you, Jim, on that basis? Well, that
kind of cynical approach to the game as its repercussions.
Yeah. I think when you think about Ken Wright, I think, yeah, you're right, he was a fan first and foremost. And sometimes you can possibly let your heart really in. I think he's made some decisions, emotional, trying to please the fans a bit too much. The sad thing for me is that, you know, you don't want to see people die. And the sad thing for me is there's a big part of the Everton fan base who would willingly sell to a maker, a state-owned club, just to have the success. And unfortunately, that's what fans are turned into now. They crave success, so they're not bothered about it being state-owned. They're not bothered who owns it. They're just bothered about their name winning games of football.
Yeah.
And it's sad, isn't it? It's sad when it gets down to them.
100%. Yeah, I've got to disagree with you there. But one of the things that keeps me kind of like...
Shock.
You know, no, keeps me... I believe Everton have got a really good moral centre. Know what I mean? One of the things that...
The club
has got a moral centre and the fans have got a moral centre. I think a lot of the fans would reject some of the things like the Newcastle pact and what have you, and maybe even some of the American... I can't prove it because I can't go round all the Everton supporters and ask them for the survey.
I think it's the wrong time to be speaking about morals as well with the inquiry going on. So.
I think the younger generation might have a different...
If Everton broke the rules, they deserve the 12 points or whatever deduction. Mm. You can't get away. I believe Man City should have had points deducted.
Of course.
I think again about FIFA and the moral centre of the game being destroyed by some of the corruption that happens in the game, and that's filtering through. You know, we've got the Newcastle lad now just picked 10 game suspensions. You know, 10 months suspension.
He's back in the squad, don't he?
Yeah, but only because FIFA haven't ratified it. Yeah.
All those decisions begin to move back that kind of, like, you know, the Bobby Charltons, what we're talking about, the Bill Shankly's, the Harry Katchicks, you know, all the old, you know,
what it all comes back to is money. Yeah. Everything comes back to money. Yeah. And it's a sad the way football's gone now. It's not the working man's game anymore.
It hasn't been for a while, Joe.
So it is in Germany. But we're not talking about Germany, we're talking about England and English football. And the fact is, when my dad was working and I was a kid, so my dad's wage, footballers would be on 5 or 6 times his wage.
Yeah.
And they'd be made up to get 5 or 6 times the wage, and they would be revered by my dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to go to match would have cost probably 1/100 of my dad's wage to go to the match. So for him to let me and my brother go to the match, it had cost him 2/100 of his wage. Mm. Or maybe 250, it's at the best, to go to the match. So now, footballers are on your dad's wage, are on 1,000 times your dad's wage. Some more, some less. But to go to the match is probably 1/6, 1/7, or 1/8 of your dad's wage.
Yeah, yeah.
So now you can't do it. You can't take 2 kids to the match if you're an all working class fella and you can't afford it.
Well, I got tickets for a young kid from Cumbria. It was a mate of mine. He's a grandson of a mate of mine. First ever game at Anfield. The kid was so excited. It was unbelievable. And they were staying in the hotel, the Phoenix Hotel. There was all the Toulouse fans there and everything. And you don't see that anymore, though, John. You don't see it often enough.
No.
That's what we did, you know. We went to match on our own, queued up outside and all that sort of stuff. I'm not sure whether you can... Do you believe that is... You can get back to that? I don't think the money's just wasted all away.
You look at, like, German. No one can say now, say the Bundesliga is a rubbish league. You know what I mean? They have a completely different model of how they of sustainability.
Yeah, but there's not much competition to Bayern Munich, is there? Because they've always got the money.
No, but not just Bayern Munich. Other German clubs are based on a certain amount of like
51% of fan ownership. Exactly.
How does that work in practice, though? I mean, 51% of the fan do what?
Well, it means that the fans have more influence on where the club's direction and all that kind of thing. When you
because
the
Germans see it as a community asset. Exactly. That's what's gone wrong with the Premier League. And that's where they've been able to, Abramovich changed the goalpost, didn't he? Mm-hmm. You know, and the horse has bolted, hasn't it? Because of the very fact that you've got clubs like City and Newcastle owned by states, and they're pretending they're not states, means that, that's the horse has already bolted, So I don't know how legislation would get it back.
You can't get it back.
I'm
telling you now, in a couple of years' time, if the progression goes with the players going to the Middle East for big money, and then he can spend whatever he wants, the problem that you're going to get is it's going to be like hyperinflation, where you won't be able to spend the money. So it'll be like spending 10,000 for a loaf. That's what it's going to become. It'll just be, well, I want him, it doesn't matter, and I'll give you that money, but you can't spend it because you're not able to buy anyone.
You're better off with it.
If it's any consolation, John, I don't know if you read the other day, but Henderson's team, Gerrard's team, got beat in front of 450 people. 450 people or something.
Yeah.
You know.
So 696 it was.
696?
Apparently.
The others must have been on freebies.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
But it's not sustainable unless some of the big, like Sky or whatever, or some of the American companies begin to turn around and say, we'll televise. And that's got to be about competition and the importance of it. Yeah. It's like the golf, isn't it?
It is sustainable for them because they think they've got unlimited money.
Mm. Yeah, but that'll have no effect on things like the Premier League or the Bundesliga and what have you.
What if you take the best players?
It's no use the best players playing in a league that no one's watching because there'll be new better players, won't there?
The only reason Saudi Arabia and countries like that are interested in players like that is because they're obsessed with the Premier League, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're not interested.
What I'm saying is if enough go and enough of the top players, so it's admirable that a lot of top players have swerved it, but eventually they'll get, I hope they don't, but if they do, and if all the top players gravitate towards that for the money, what you'll have the UEFA will have no alternative but to invite them into the Champions League.
100%. And all that Super League is still on the horizon.
Whoa. Allez les Rouges on the Blood Red Channel.
Anyway, going back to Toulouse in the Europa, do you reckon any of their players will be Saudi Arabian teams will be after them? Because what I mean is like the gulf between Europa and Liverpool.
When you watched the game after about 5 minutes, you knew that the result wasn't in doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a storm in the park, wasn't it?
It was, and to be fair, they caused us quite a few problems. That you wouldn't expect them to, but they did. But that. The thing about winning that Europa League, all you've got to do is hope Seville's not going.
Have you booked for Dublin?
I'm still scarred from the past.
You've got it right, John. We all agreed no more European game. We're watching on the telly, obviously, but that was just.
It depends who drops down from the European.
Yeah. Man United and Liverpool in Dublin. That's my prediction. It was a stroll in the park. But how did Nunes miss that chance? Because he did absolutely brilliantly.
He did absolutely
brilliantly. Like the way his movements and that. And then you think, how can he miss it?
All four of us would have slotted it.
I missed one of them once. I was in the Cubs. I was six. Yeah. Playing the under-18s. He should have just had another touch, and he thought that it was just a goal. Yeah. It was rolling. Yeah. He's underestimated the fact that he was going away from the goal.
Yeah. Well, what about the Toulouse player?
Yeah.
Who had 90% of the goal to
him. Shad blasted Trent. Unbelievable. I mean, there was laughter around the ground. It's like there wasn't much happening apart from the Toulouse fans singing all through the game like PSG did. Yeah. And they came a few years ago and they were fantastic. They even went to Central Station, didn't they? I don't know if you saw the footage.
Yeah, yeah,
in
yeah.
Central Station, obviously trying to suss out the new trains.
You go back to Nunes, though. The crowd, the way the crowd have taken to him does tell you that they still enjoy seeing he's a footballer who could have played in the area that we've just been speaking about. Yeah. They love him to death, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
The good part about the Toulouse miss, though, it was... Going back to the days of goalie on the spot, wasn't it? How many plays on the field? Goalie on the spot.
So we've got Forest on Sunday. So you know, after the first 44 games in the Premier League, so that was last season and September, August and September this season, they'd never had a draw. But in since October. They've had four draws in the last five games. So they've tightened up, haven't they? They've done exactly what you were thinking Everton should try and do. But Cooper's tightened up from losing games to drawing games now. So how do you see it, John, on Sunday?
Well, it's a game everyone expects you to win. Yeah. Or everyone expects Liverpool to win. And I know teams try to tighten up against Liverpool. Liverpool, over the last 12 months... I think they've been very, very vulnerable in the first 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
And Everton had that opportunity after that.
And Villa showed that, didn't they? Yeah.
So I think their best way of getting anything is to attack Liverpool and try and score early on.
Yeah.
Because the longer the game goes on, the more you fancy Liverpool.
Sure. Yeah. Well, Liverpool's bench was packed with stars, wasn't it, on last night?
Yeah.
So they're fifth for the game. I expect Liverpool to cruise this one.
Yeah.
I like the hunger of Salah wanting to come on to score.
Yeah.
That's all he's come on to.
Absolutely.
He's only come on saying that. That's a direct effort to come on.
It's a bit of a trivia for you. Liverpool haven't lost to a team, beginning with N, since Norwich beat us in the first day. The last day of the Cup. April 1994.
And interestingly enough, Everson are unbeaten against Jeremy teams Goss. That were an ex.
Jeremy Goss.
have they not lost to Newcastle?
No. What?
Not lost to Newcastle?
Not at home, no. I don't think
not
so.
At home? No. Oh, was that an equaliser that he got late on?
That's on the Premier League website, so it must be true.
Jeremy Goss scored that goal.
Chris Cavanagh's in charge. Any thoughts on him, John? Have you had any experience of?
I mean, what you've got to realise is that they don't go out to make mistakes. They don't go out to court controversy. It's a difficult job, and I think they haven't had the help that they should get off VAR for one. I think it's put them on their back foot a little bit as well with the decision making. And the big frustrating thing for me at the moment is that. Linesmen, or assistant referee as they call now, are told to keep the flag down, you know, if there's a little bit of doubt.
Yeah.
But then they could miss the chance and they get a corner from something that's offside.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that should be eradicated.
Yeah.
You shouldn't get a corner for something that's offside that you can fix. You know, they should say, oh no, by the way, that was offside.
Yeah. Another stat for the Notts Forest game. The last four games have produced 23 goals. So that's nearly six goals per game. Can you see
against
that?
Against Liverpool
versus Forest. Well.
I can 23 goals. I take the statistics, you know, lies, damn statistics and what have you. Who did they play in those last five games? Yeah, you can see it now and say, oh, they've tightened up.
Nottingham
Forest, yes.
When they drew, you mean?
Yeah. I mean, who have they played? You know, have they really tightened up? I think that's a 3-0 Liverpool win all day.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
that's what I've been
so did Stan Collymore said that on the radio before.
3-0.
He rang me up. I'm still scarred him up for 2-0 defeats in the European Cup.
Oh. Anyway, you've been listening to Alain Larouge. I'd like to thank John Coleman, Atkinson Stanley's manager, Jimmy Clark, who doesn't manage any team at the moment, but he would like to manage
everything. He can.
And Paul Taylor for doing this. And another stat... according to The Echo, this was not this particular podcast, but the Blood Red series of podcasts for the Liverpool Echo had about 1 million downloads last month.
Wow.
So that's not bad, is it?
Yeah.
You know?
Checking the post, is
it? So thanks to everyone all around the world who's listening to these. And especially thanks to Jimmy, because I know it's been difficult coming in and facing three Liverpoolians. 3-1. That's about the ratio, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. As I say, I've got four kids, three reds, one blue, so it's always three.
We never even mentioned Sandy Brown, did we?
No.
Classic derbies. Thanks very much for listening. See you again in a couple of weeks. Allez les Rouges.
You've been listening to Allez les Rouges from the Liverpool Echoes Blood Red Channel.